It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hello, Mr. Pryor.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Really good. Got you in studio once again this week talking about a subject you talk with your clients with quite a bit, and that's marriage issues. You do a lot of marital counseling, and this week the hope for broken marriages, and you want to talk about how to repair a broken marriage.
Yeah, and I want to talk about if it's possible.
Okay.
and then possibly how. There are some things that get in the way of it, and if you're in the audience listening and you've known anyone who's been married, of course you do. And we all know people who have been divorced, even Christian people who have been divorced.
And then get remarried.
Sometimes. But sometimes they don't. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Occasionally you hear of people getting divorced and remarrying. Doesn't happen very often. Right. And unfortunately, it's often the case that people go past a certain kind of a point of no return. At least in their mind, it's a point of no return. And then they just feel like it's just better to end the relationship. And I see those in the counseling in the office a lot too. And you know, you sort of would just want to get a hold of people, and of course from your perspective, from the outside looking at the, you kind of have a, you can be more objective, and it just seems like if you behave a certain way and think a certain way, things can change. But of course, when you're in the situation, it doesn't seem that way. Mm. Marriages are broken for lots of different reasons. I've got a few down here, probably the primary ones. Finances can be something that can really cause enough problems or trauma.
Would you say that's
turmoil.
The number one thing?
I've heard it say that. You know, people might say, well, what about infidelity? Well, a lot of times one of these leads to another.
Okay.
You know, so a lot of times these pressures mount up together. And, you know, if there's infidelity, you're probably going to point to the infidelity, but it could be other things too. So I've got finances, of course, infidelity, obviously that generally gets people to past that point of no return, although we've probably all familiar with situations of married couples where there's been infidelity in the marriage and they've survived. part of what I want to talk about in the next couple shows is if you're surviving, are you continuing to be healthy? Another thing that that can bring marriage to that brink and even beyond is illness.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody can come down with physical illness or mental illness. And another one is loss. You know, sometimes a death in the family can take a married couple past that point.
A death of a child, or maybe a parent, or
possibly a death of a parent if it's traumatic. I've dealt with a couple years ago where she was an only child, and in a short period of time she lost her father and her mother, and that pushed that marriage really to the edge, and of course. Things like this happen. These situations happen. The unforeseen, it does happen. And marriages that survive that have certain ingredients. Other marriages that lack those ingredients that we're going to talk about tend not to do as well. So any of those that I've mentioned, and maybe some others, can be acute, or they can be chronic. They can build over time, and they can mount up to a kind of a level of trauma that to the point of just total devastation, and that can destroy not only the climate of the relationship, but it can destroy the relational material that you would need to recover. If that material was there to begin with, I'm talking primarily of things like trust and devotion, you know, commitment one to another and trust one another. So a lot of times when these things happen, those things that are very necessary are destroyed too. And a lot of times too, the obvious thing, which might be the finances or the infidelity or the loss or the illness, that's not always the whole problem. The relationships, as I mentioned before, that survive those kinds of things have something going for them that weaker relationships don't have. And I've talked on the show about distances in relationships. And, of course, if there's too much distance in the relationship, it's like putting too much weight on, you know, a rope or something. It's going to snap. Distances cause weakness. And, of course, all couples bring distance into marriage. From the outset, they bring it in from their family of origin. As we've talked before and probably mentioned a few times in these next broadcasts here, personalities are everybody's personality is basically fundamentally at the core a defense mechanism, and there's distance represented there.
Well, what do you mean by a distance? A distance?
Well, there's a good point, good question. So there are things like. It's a psychological and emotional distance, and I sometimes use synonymously terms like difference. A difference can be a distance. So, for example, a cultural difference can be a distance. There was the sitcom situation where a particular man wanted to marry someone from another culture who didn't speak his language so that he couldn't say stupid things and be understood.
Okay.
Lose in the relationship, so that would represent a lot of distance,
yeah, okay.
You know, and you actually see people who marry across cultural boundaries like that or ethnic boundaries.
It might be romantic at first, but I can't imagine that is helpful.
Yeah, well, it all has some kind of distance involved in it. It's a psychological and emotional distance, and of course, you get too much of that, and the relationship is just too weak. And then when the relationship is weak, these circumstances that we've talked about, they kind of conspire to break this at the weakest link. And then, of course, the problem is couples might try to regroup and recover from whatever the trauma has been, but without tools. And obviously, if they had tools, they probably wouldn't have gotten here to begin with, at least in the cases of infidelity and finances and like that. So if they don't have tools, and as equally as important, if they don't have a plan, a specific plan for moving forward, then couples can more often than not, just kind of slip into a way of coexisting. And that coexistence can become just too painful to sustain. One question that is on their minds, if it's not spoken, can we find love again? Can we return to where we are? Of course, can we go back to where we were? Failing to realize that where we were may not have been all that healthy to begin with. I've actually many times heard people who have been married and divorced, married and maybe divorced again, and maybe in their third marriage and struggling, talk about their first marriage or their first marriages as though they were very functional and very supportive. And, of course, none of that can be true. Otherwise, they'd still be
right.
Married. So a lot of times it's failing to realize that where we were in the beginning may not have been all that healthy. And maybe that's part of the reason that where we are now. So can we return to love? Can people be in love again? Well, you know, we can always find love. That is, if by love we mean the pure love of God, nothing stops the love of God. Nothing can destroy that. And in fact, we're probably much more likely to find the love of God after in disappointment and at a time of loss and a time of brokenness. At least that's been my experience, that's when I'm drawn closer to God, is in the time of my need. The love of God is in some ways much more apparent in those times. The question is, do we really want that kind of love? Because it's a selfless kind of love. You know, say parenthetically here that sometimes, regardless of what separated people, what the trauma was, a lot of times they'll rely on sexual intimacy as a kind of that touch and tactical tactic, intimacy, to bring them back together and sort of rescue the failing marriage. Of course, that doesn't work. And in fact, that part of the relationship is likely not particularly healthy to begin with. The old saying, least loving when making love. So to rely on that a lot of times is going in the wrong direction. It's not something that you can, a lot of times when marriages are broken, what we're talking about is they're really depleted of things like trust and giving and receiving, that ability to give and receive and communion and those kinds of things. So in an act like sexual intimacy that requires, if it's healthy, it requires trust and it requires, you know, healthy giving and receiving. So it's really difficult to try to salvage the relationship with that. And instead we find what we might do is recoil into a kind of a defensive position and we might posture ourselves out of, I have down here, wounded pride or judgment or indignation. So I see a lot of finger pointing and blame and rather than actually people moving together after the relationship has been traumatized like this, instead of them, being able to regroup, they actually often recoil from one another and become defensive toward one another. And if it, like in the case of many things, could be infidelity, could be the loss of someone or something, and they will even point blame. When, if you think it through, the blame isn't deserved. A particular situation I'm thinking about now is a married couple where, when they got married, he promised her in some way, at least she thought he promised her that he would make a certain amount of money a year. And then after they'd been married for a short period of time, he went into a nonprofit, and it took him a while to build up the nonprofit, and so she divorced him because she said he had lied to her, and that they weren't financially as free as she has wanted to be. So that's a situation where, you know, it's an unforeseen thing. There's really not any blame, but it's so easy to point the finger when we're disappointed and that kind of thing. So,
well, can a marriage be repaired? Repairing a broken marriage is the subject this week on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Daniel, you do a lot of marriage counseling, and you believe that marriages can be repaired. It's not easy, but they can be. And if people need some repair work on their marriage or they know somebody who's going through a tough time, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website BibleBasedCounselor.com. You're going to find this show as a podcast there. Two offices, Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast, How to Repair a Broken Marriage, Part 2 in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the subject of how to repair a broken marriage. Can it be done? And Daniel believes it can be, but not always easy.
Yeah, not always easy. We're talking about distances, and Mark wants to go on a scenic drive here for a short bit. So we'll talk a little bit about different kinds of distances. What makes that up? The marriage proposal and acceptance. So the man typically proposes, the woman accepts, and that's an agreement to a psychological and emotional distance that's been in part modeled first by our parents and in our culture. And it's part of our personality. Mark was asking about what kinds of things make up distance, and specifically brought up even age difference. So I said earlier in the show that I often use the word difference as synonymous with distance. And there's lots of different kinds of differences. Of course, men and women are different. And so there's some distance, kinds of distances you can't do anything about. You can't do a lot about the difference, the distance between male and female, but there are things that you can do to close other distance in other ways. You know, men can learn to be submissive too. Men can learn to be to bring out their quote unquote feminine side instead of being embarrassed by that. They can, and that can really sweeten the marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there are ways. But the distance that that you brought up, Mark, having to do with age. Yeah, any distance like that, age distance, geographical distance. Those are distances too. They also are psychological and emotional distances. So you're talking about, you know, you want to be careful when you're marrying at a great, I would say that if men are significantly older, I'm not sure that that's a healthier relationship, but it seems to have a little,
seems to work
not,
a little
not as
better.
High a mortality rate. Mm-hmm. Whereas if women are much older, that's, kind of walking, that doesn't have as good a positive prognosis.
And why is that? Because just the female need to respect and be sort of be have a leader or something?
Yeah, I think that women typically, the feminine side of our nature, that is, and women tend to have more of that feminine side in their nature, that they're more wired to look up to and depend on in some ways, the man in some ways. And so if the man is older, that does not hamper that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, up to a point, I think. Yeah. There's a point at which it begins to be, you know, why would you marry a man that's 25 years older or something like that? Mm-hmm. That's that might turn out to be a problem. But if you marry a guy marries a gal that's 25 years older, I've seen marriages of 15 years difference where the woman was 15 years older. And when you start to get in those older years then, and you've got a gal that's like 75 and a man that's 60, then it can be problematic. And so you want to be careful with that. 5-6 years, that doesn't seem to make a difference. And sometimes you've got a guy that's extremely, you know, or very mature for his age. And so he marries a gal that's 3, 4, maybe 5 years older, and it doesn't seem to be a problem. Mm. But a gal certainly needs to have a person that she can look up to.
And this seems to affect also the whole area. It's a more of a newer problem of women who make a lot more money than their husband. Mm-hmm. That seems to cause problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it can. And I know that's more and more common all the time. So that's even more. So we were talking about the things that break up marriages, and we mentioned finances as one. And that actually can become the kind of a chronic trauma, can traumatize a relationship chronically. So these are the sorts of things that people should have their eye on and should be resolving and talking about and readjusting their kind of their mindset on these things. But if you're not doing that, if you're not communicating those, then the distance just continues to increase. Mm. So people are drawn together. As I said, the proposal and acceptance, the marriage agreement, that is actually also an agreement of psychological and emotional distance, which is intuited. In fact, I've said that I'm not sure that we marry our parents or that opposites attract. But I am sure that when we marry, we're repeating psychological and emotional distances that were modeled for us. Mm-hmm. And then that distance has to be maintained. And so we maintain these distances in lots of different ways that as we're going along in our marriage early years, these things seem to be harmless and a little bit, you know, maybe they're not particularly pleasant, but they don't seem to be things that are going to sink the boat. But we maintain distance by arguing, by condescension. How many marriages you've gone to visit a married couple, or you see them in church, or you see them around a lot, mm-hmm. and you notice that they don't speak very respectfully to one another. Mm. They're sort of condescending or harsh with one another. Busyness can be a way of distancing. You know, she works the day shift, he works the night shift. or they're running two different businesses or something, and the busyness is a way of maintaining distance. Sometimes people use various kinds of anger to maintain distance. Humor can be an anger. We've talked about that before. Exclusion. I've got my sport. She can't. She doesn't feel comfortable doing that, so I'm off by myself doing my sport. You know, whether it's golfing or hiking, and so I choose things. Find myself choosing things that she doesn't, or she chooses things that I don't enjoy, and so we become. That seems innocent enough, but it becomes exclusion.
Can be,
kind of superficiality. I've got that down to just not ever really talking deeply or communing deeply. We use these other tools, arguing, condescension, busyness, along with superficiality, just to keep the relationship surface level and afraid to get any deeper. Addictive behaviors are ways of distancing. And when we practice those things and we're not working hard to get rid of those kinds of weeds in our relationship, the relationship just never matures. And love that exists, quote-unquote love that exists in that kind of an environment of needed distance and maintained distance is always doomed to fail, because it fundamentally lacks the selfless commitment that you have to have in a marriage if you're going to weather these kinds of unforeseen things, that, mm-hmm. unpleasant things that come along. Mm-hmm. And yet, this is the kind of love that many couples believe that they need to return to after the marriage has been deeply traumatized. Ergo, the question, can we get back to where we were?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you never can, nor would that love suffice, because that love failed, and couples need need more if they're gonna go on. So, couples, in order to move on, there's some basic things here. Couples really need to consider what intimacy could look like realistically going forward in the absence of what's been lost. So. Before they can plan to pursue a future, they have to at some level be able to envision the future. And sometimes people don't even want to do that. They want to stay in their pain and in the blame, and they don't want to be gracious and courageous and start talking about, okay, what will the future look like? Imagine something off topic a bit, but it helps us maybe to clarify what I'm talking about. Examples of athletes who have had these life-changing losses, and people I came across. If you Google athletes amputee or something like that, you'll get just reams and reams of stories about Jeremy Campbell, who is an amputee, leg amputee, and he competes in the pentathlon. Kelly Cartwright, an Australian gymnast who competes and wins championships. Amy Perdue, a snowboard champion.
And with she
one
competed
leg,
on Dancing with the Stars.
And Dancing with the Stars, and she has a line of clothing. Mm-hmm. And of course, most people know of Johnny Erickson Tata. And her, pretty much from her teen years on. And so all of these people, they're not able to return to what it was before, that they have to redefine life in order to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so to those who want to recover from broken marriage, they have to redefine love. They have to redefine satisfaction. They have to redefine purpose. And those are fundamental things. If you want to move forward into the future, you have to picture the future and sort of have the grace to move in that direction.
Repairing a broken marriage. This is kind of just starting to scratch the surface of some to-do list. I guess we're going to kind of look at that next week's show on vulnerability after disappointment. But it is possible to repair a broken marriage, and Daniel does do a lot of marital counseling. He's been there, done that, seen all kinds of situations, and if you're willing to work at it, he thinks that there's hope. And if people need help, they are going through a tough time in their marriage, or they know somebody is, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where these radio shows are there in podcast form, so you can listen to them again, pass them on to other people.
Lots of shows.
About 4 years.
Yeah.
And offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, that's again... BibleBasedCounselor.com for more details there. Sound Mind broadcast with Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor this week on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.